Today on The Grave Talks, Downloads from the Other Side, a conversation with Chelsea Gill. What started as a little girl giving an ominous message to her grandmother would evolve into a life of helping others communicate with the deceased or bring notes to them to help them better navigate life. Sometimes these messages would save lives. Other times, these messages would help give closure to a family whose loved one had seemingly vanished. Today, Downloads from the Other Side, a conversation with Chelsea Gill.
Well, oh my goodness, I don't even know where to start. my biggest memory is I've always been sensitive. So I'm a ninth generation psychic medium. And throughout the years, I would spend the weekends at my grandparents' if we had off of school the upcoming Monday. And my grandfather passed when I was 6 months old, so I never really got to meet him. And I would always feel like I was being watched while I was at my grandmother's house. And obviously, when you're very little, you know, you don't know what it is. You would always say, you know, mommy, I feel being watched and nobody can see it. And to fast forward to when I was 7, it was Sunday. I spent the night at my grandmother's with my cousin. Come Monday morning, I woke up and I had like a terrible feeling. And I remember seeing things in the house. Like I always have, someone's watching, and it just felt like doom. And I remember looking at my grandmother and it just came out of my mouth and I said, you're going to die. And my grandmother freaked out. We were at the bowling alley for her Monday morning bowling league. She called my mother and she's like, you got to come pick up your daughter. She's telling me I'm going to die. And that feeling just didn't go away. And I would always, like I said, just see shadows. You know, it might be black, it might be white. And it wasn't all the time that I would feel this doomy, but something just wasn't right. And a week later, she got into a horrible car accident and she was in the hospital. And she's still alive today, but that feeling went away. And I stopped seeing the spirits in the sense of when I didn't want to see them. I know that sounds crazy. So that's when it really all started. So my mom kept a dialogue of different things I would feel and see at different locations. And it just, as I got older, I would hear things in my own home to the point of things would move right in front of me. I felt like I was in Matilda, you know, things were just moving across the floor, across the counter. And one of the biggest memories of my home that I actually still reside in, it was a Friday, and it was during lunch because it was Fish Fry Friday, and my girlfriend got off the bus with me. My mom and dad were not home, and we were in my room, and we heard footsteps. And we have a ranch home. It's not two stories, so you're going to hear everything on the first floor. And we heard footsteps, and I felt that same doom-like feeling. So I jumped off my bed from when we were doing homework and I shut the door. And I kid you not, the door flew open and someone was banging on the wall that we jumped. And within about 5 minutes, my mother came home and my girlfriend's like, I got to go. So she asked her mom to come pick her up. And stuff like that still happens. But I've told them, like, if you really need me, you know, come to me. Don't scare anybody. And that just continues into the adulthood of me going to different paranormal locations as an adult.
And we'll get into all of that as an adult, but I want to take a step back into your childhood where your grandma's at the bowling alley for her Monday morning bowling league. You're sitting there having a Coca-Cola and some nachos and you go over to Ma or your grandma and go, you're going to die. And then she says to your mom on the phone, you got to come pick up your daughter. How did that conversation go with your mom when you got picked up, being a ninth generation psychic medium and you're only 7 at the time? How is this? Was it explained to you? How did the conversation go at that moment in time where you said this to grandma? Mom comes and gets you. They probably know something's up, and they're probably really not that surprised that you have this ability. But again, you're seven, so sometimes you can explain that, sometimes you can't. What happened at that point?
My mom kept asking me, "Are you hearing it? Or is it a sensation? Mm-hmm. And if you're hearing it, is it a male voice? Is it your own voice? Is it a female's voice?" But she asked, I call it the nitty gritty question. Mm-hmm. How long have I felt this? And she just kept a journal. So if every day, because we all know the intuition, so your intuition can change daily upon a subject, that every day she would ask me, "How do you feel today?" And it sounds bad, I felt like I was with a psychiatrist. "How do you feel today?" Mm-hmm. Same as yesterday. Nothing's changed. And I remember her, she was actually concerned because I guess I was like white as a ghost. Mm-hmm. And I was actually petrified because it felt doomy. And obviously at the age of seven, I didn't know the difference between death and severe bodily injury.
Sure.
And she made sure, she asked if the shadows, what color were they? Did I see them in clothing? Did I smell a certain thing? Was it a pipe? Certain cigarettes? Did I see the person with a certain alcoholic beverage? Mm-hmm. Because if that might be, say, grandpa, that's giving me a forewarning to protect his wife that's still alive. Mm-hmm. So she tried to figure out if it was a random spirit coming in that shouldn't have been there, or is it someone that's related to me that's trying to get my attention to forewarn? But I remember going home and I said, "Mom, I just need to take a nap." Because like I still feel it in my body today of how much anxiety I had that morning.
Why do you think you as a child got that warning? And who do you think you got the warning from?
I think me as a child got the warning because at that point my ability is starting to heighten. Mm-hmm. And because you're going into second grade at that time. So you're just getting into school. And I personally think it was a loved one. I think it was my grandfather who was giving me a warning about the vehicle rather than my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't her, she was in the accident, but it wasn't caused by her. Mm-hmm. So I think I should have been able to heed the warning of, "Don't let her drive. Don't let her get in a car. Maybe we can bypass it."
Okay.
But again, I was too young to adhere to what the message vividly meant. I just felt doomed. Felt like I had the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
It was awful.
That's always an interesting thing to me. And I'd love to get your take on that. Is who is the vessel of the message? Because sometimes you look at this and you go, Why did they pick a 7-year-old to deliver this message when the sensitivity is there for your mom and for your grandmother? But I would think, just if I were dead, put yourself in the shoes of the spirit, you would almost think, logic would tell you would want to deliver such a message to someone who may be more qualified to give the message because they're more in tune with the ability. They understand what this may mean more clearly, especially when it's, borderline life and death. Why is that in your case that you think your grandfather made the judgment that you were the one to deliver that? And then more so as a whole, when we hear stories like that from other individuals where it's kind of baffling, why did this person get the message and not that person who may be more qualified or more trusted with what they're saying to an adult?
I think I was given the message to alert my mother that she's ready.
Okay.
To hit the next step in her ability. So I think that in the sense of a family orientation, that was that part of the message.
Okay.
But I think in general, I'll be honest, I don't know why I was chosen because maybe I could have protected my grandmother.
Yeah.
I know my mother had suppressed it because it scared her.
Okay.
But she got the gut feelings. She had dreams, but nothing that contributed to my grandmother. That was the only one that had any sensation for my grandmother. And I'll be honest, at the age of seven, I was very shocked that I knew it was for my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Because when you feel a doom, you don't know, is it me? Is it, you know, you, is it grandma? And I just knew it was her. I just felt it. I didn't hear any voices. And I know that sounds weird. You just know.
It's like a download.
You just got a sensation.
Yeah. The way I describe that sort of thing is download. Because I think it's the easiest way for all of us to kind of comprehend it.
God.
You know, versus.
That is like the best word.
Yeah, it is. I mean, because it's just, you know, you don't need to, you know, the computer knows what the file is. The data's there. But you don't have to read it aloud to, you know, to have it be on the computer. That's kind of how I view some of that stuff, where it's just boom, all the info, it's there. We know it. We don't know how we know it, but it shows up. How did you feel that? I mean, I know I'm asking you to recall things from back when you were seven, but that week between getting that message at the bowling alley with your grandmother and then leading up to the accident, were you anxious all week? Did you think much more of it? Did you move on, as some kids kind of do, from time to time? How did that go for you?
I remember being in that anxiety, overwhelming bubble for that entire week.
Mm-hmm.
That the sensation did not go away. I remember I couldn't really eat anything because I just didn't know when,
mm-hmm.
didn't know how. And I was just in the anticipation that it was like I had the flu. Like, I just didn't want to go anywhere. I wanted to sleep, stay in bed. And I remember getting a phone call that she was in the hospital, and instantly that anxiety was like, a weight was lifted off my shoulders.
Wow.
It was amazing.
What was the reaction? First, I want to ask about your mother's reaction. Then I want to talk about your grandmother's reaction once she had recovered more to hear what her thoughts were, looking back on this prediction that you made, and then the accident happening. What was your mom's initial reaction when she found out, you know, obviously concern, you know, oh my God, my mother's been in a horrible accident. But then when she connects it to your, you know, foreboding warning, what was her thoughts there?
I remember my mother getting the phone call, and the first question she asked is, my mother okay? And I remember hearing the nurse on the phone saying, yes, she's okay. We're keeping her for observation, you know, yada, yada, yada. And she hung up the phone and she just looked at me and she goes, that's it. And when I just looked at her, that's when the sensation came off of me. And I said, is grandma okay? What happened? And she just looked at me and she goes, you predicted that. Grandma's okay. She goes, I'm ready to rock and roll. I was like, rock and roll with what? She goes, we are ready to now track everything you see, hear, feel, smell, and touch from here on out. And she goes, they're allowing visitors up until I think it was 5 o'clock that day, because it was a Saturday. And she goes, let's go up and see how she is for you to know that she's okay, because it's different.
Yeah.
You tell me she's okay, and I felt it, but it would be nice to see her to make sure she is okay.
Yeah.
And my mom, it sounds like she was so proud that I had a premonition for my grandmother, even though I didn't know exact detail, but it was enough to keep an extra eye that my mother was that meddling daughter for my grandmother, poor grandma, to check on her. What's she eating? Is she working? Is she breathing? You know, and she wasn't even sick. So when we got to the hospital, my grand just looked at me and she's like, oh my God. I was like, well, at least you're okay. But my mom couldn't be more proud.
Yeah.
That whatever I had came to fruition and it was done.
Your mom is telling you at this point, okay, we're ready to start tracking this. You probably at this moment don't even know what the hell she's talking about. We're going to start tracking this? You know, like, what is this? What are we talking about? What's going through your mind as this is starting to be explained to you that you have this ability that you really were unaware of before, other than these are feelings that you're having, but they have meaning, and this obviously proved that there was meaning to it. What's going through, you know, little Chelsea's mind at that moment in time?
When she told me we're going to start tracking it, she had this look on her face like we are going to Super Bowl. And I questioned it. And then when we got back from the hospital, she's like, all right. So she had the compensation notebook that she already wrote down my feeling the day she picked me up on that Monday, and then every day that week. And she goes, now I'm going to ask you, do you recall feeling any sort of sensation that you're not alone, or you feel you need to bypass going to the grocery store with me, or whatever it might be. And that's when it really triggered my mind going, well, I was seeing things in the house, but you always say your mind's playing tricks on you. So then I went into explaining what I was seeing in my grandmother's house. And that's when I found out my great-grandmother passed away in the home, which I did not know. So she was like, okay, well, that would explain it, because I always smelled this powdery perfume, old powdery perfume. And my grandmother never wore that. And obviously no one else was living in the house, my grandmother's widow, and to find out my great-grandmother wore that perfume. So now she's looking back on it, and I just remember going, well, I've had these sensations for a while now. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why didn't you say anything? I'm like, well, you just think it's normal, you know? She's like, oh, well, your mind's playing tricks on you. It was the wind, or you had a nightmare. You know, because nightmares are real. So you pictured every visitation with someone you didn't know, that they said that your great-grandma Jo, you just shoved it off, especially as a kid. Mind's playing tricks on you. This isn't real. And since then, we watched paranormal TV shows to know, like, okay, I'm not alone. This stuff does happen, because it happened to my mom. But again, my mom suppressed it, because years ago, you didn't talk about it.
Sure.
It wasn't real. But I remember just looking at her like she had four heads. Like, what are we tracing and what are we tracking?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful that she did, because I have a book that has premonitions and feelings in it.
You've obviously found a way in your life to use this ability to help others beyond just yourself. Your mom said she suppressed it, and that's understandable because, yeah, you didn't talk about it for a good period of time. Was this something, though, that your grandmother or other generations embraced a little bit more or tried to not suppress or almost used as like a superpower, to a certain extent of everyday life, of this is a skill I have and I'm going to use it. I may not necessarily, talk in great depths or fully understand exactly what's going on, but I know I'm right. I know I have this ability. I don't really know exactly what it is or why it's there, but it's something that's beyond what a lot of other people have.
So I kept asking my mom, because I knew my grandmother didn't quite have it. And I asked my mother, where did it come from? And it came from my grandfather's side, who was deceased, the one that I was 6 months old with.
Okay.
And that side of the family, again, they didn't even talk about it. She knew my grandfather had something because he owned a company and he would know to get, he cleaned out houses. So he would go into a house and I guess he would tell the workers, like, you need to speed up this process. Something's not right. And they would bypass, like, someone coming in and shooting up the place because it's a vacant property. Like, there was a lot of times where he knew things prior to happening,
mm-hmm.
and he saved multiple people's lives.
Wow.
So I, because we didn't know, I was too young when he passed, that the family kind of fell apart on that side. So up until recently, it's funny how you asked that, the last 10 years, they've been doing ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And to find out my grandfather's family, who we just lost contact with over the last 28 years, does practice it. And our family goes back to Salem witch trials.
Okay.
So they did some who are still alive have wellness centers in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
in different states. So some of them do practice. I've had family members that are like great grandparents that were at Lilydale, which is a local. And a lot of people do not know a lot about it, but it's a psychic community here in New York State. Very well known. It's been on multiple TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
The family has been there as readers. But I didn't know that up until recently. So the only time I knew is that my family did have it, but I didn't know who practiced it. So as far as I knew, I was the only one in the family that opened up a corporation to help people on different healing modalities with my gift.
As you got older and beyond 7 years old, you get into, tween years, teen years and all that. Is this something, was this something that, that you wanted? Did you want this gift to have at, through those, you know, their trivial years without the gift, but then to have that, that kind of, you know, always running in the background, what were you feeling about it as you got older?
I did not know how to control it. So I asked God, my believer, to, if I'm supposed to have it, can you dim it down a notch so I can be a typical 13-year-old, 14-year-old?
Mm-hmm.
Because I would see things in the school hallways. I would know when someone's lying to me. I would know when someone wasn't being truthful, et cetera, that I was getting agitated throughout school years. But I knew I wanted to keep it. I didn't want to suppress it. I just asked God not to overwhelm me with it. So as I got older, I vowed that I will serve the community with it, and I have a master's in criminal justice with a minor in psychology. So I went to become a cop,
mm-hmm.
and work my way up to become a detective,
mm-hmm.
and have the gift that way to work on cases. But I remember asking God that I didn't want to be overwhelmed. I never asked him to get rid of it because I didn't want to lose it. I always believe, still to this day, you ask, you shall receive. So you have to be mindful of the choice of words you use. So I made sure I just asked God to dim it down just a smidge so I can feel normal,
mm-hmm.
and not live in an anxiety-filled world.
What was it like growing up into those teen years and having this gift? Was it something that you talked to your friends about at all?
I had some friends that I call them the intellectual ones, that they wouldn't judge me on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really talk about it much just because... you see people aren't accepted on so many other levels of the choice of clothes that they had, that let alone I'm seeing dead people.
Sure.
I'd probably be sent to a loony bin. So I think I had throughout my school years, two people max outside of my own family. I'm saying my family as in like mom, dad, grandmother, brother,
mm-hmm.
that I would speak to about it. And a lot of times it's because I would tell them, if we're going to walk to, say, 7-Eleven, we typically would take a normal route. I felt, let's not take that route today. And we'd be thankful that we didn't, because something happened that was on the news that we could have been part of.
Mm-hmm.
So they always hung that, they always trusted me with it. But a random person I would not invest in because I didn't want to be bullied. And a whole different avenue.
Sure, that's completely understandable. I mean, when, like the example you just made there, you're going to walk to the 7-Eleven, and, you know, there's something speaking to you, or you're just getting information that you know, let's take this route instead, whatever it may be. Was it always clear to you what the ominous feeling was, like what it meant in great detail? Like, there's going to be a shooting down the road here, or was it just... don't go there. I can't tell you why, but just don't do it. And then, you know, reality would play out, and then you'd end up getting your reason as to why you felt that way.
That would be the second one, where okay. I wouldn't vividly, I would know to a certain point of, you are in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
I would feel a certain way if I was in harm's way. I would feel a certain way if, we'd be encountering someone, say, if we had a bad issue with somebody that you got into a fight with, and you don't want to encounter that person.
Sure.
I would feel the difference between something's going to happen to you guys by a stranger, or, you know what, we're just not going to want you to bypass that person on the street because we don't want any more controversy.
Yeah.
So I would know the difference, but I wouldn't know exactly detail of it's a shooting, it's an abduction, or it's Joe Schmo that you had an argument with earlier.
Yeah.
I would just know which one it would be, and I wasn't taking a risk.
Did that ability hone itself in more as you got older in terms of the definition of what you get from just... You know, this is, you know, it's almost like, you know, heat. You know, you can stand, you know, away from a fire and you can feel the heat of the fire and you go, okay, I'm not going to get any closer. You can walk right up to that fire and you can see the embers and you can see the logs and you can see exactly how it's burning and where, you know, it may collapse over in this area. And it's much clearer because you got even closer to that fire. You're feeling the heat much more intensely with greater detail. Is that how it progressed for you, or does it kind of stay the same throughout life of, you know, almost just warning, and we'll find out what the warning is about later?
If it's regarding me, mm-hmm. as in the sense of something's wrong and they're trying to get my attention rather than for, like, my grandmother,
yeah,
it is a omniance of something isn't right, and then I would say my senses are heightened. So then the criminal justice comes out going, okay, and I will ask out loud, is it regarding me in medical? Is it regarding me in work? And then I will go through, say, friendship names who I'm close with, mm-hmm. and I will feel a certain way. But if it's regarding, say, you, and I have something for you, I feel a certain way, it will be very clear that I will know what the warning is, what the message is, who said it, what they did for a living. Mm-hmm. I can see them, I can smell them, I can touch them. For myself, nope, but for others, vivid.
Okay. Very interesting. Is this something where every, because I'm curious about this, and obviously a lot of people are that aren't in our world of paranormal and talking about this stuff every single day. You know, sometimes people look at this almost as, you know, some believe, some don't believe, some just, you know, they almost look at it as, well, this is going to be an interesting thing. I have no idea what I'm going to get. If someone comes to you and they say, tell me what you got. Do you always have something for them? Do you always have a, you know, something is coming through, or does it really need to be, you know, something's in queue and something is waiting for this person, and then essentially you're the individual that is able to decipher that message and give it to them? Or sometimes people's queues of messages just empty and there's really nothing to tell them.
So it depends. So if I see a client or a patient of mine and there's messages, it'll be very clear and there's always something. Mm-hmm. If you contact me and say, Chelsea, do you have a message for me today? Mm-hmm. I can definitely hone in on you and give you something that is either warning, message, love and light, advice, whatever it might be. But if I get nothing for somebody, mm-hmm. in a sense of I actually see nothing, I see black, I then actually interpret that they're not going to be around for much longer.
Wow.
I've never had an issue of, I've never been able to read somebody. There are certain types of people that want something specific, mm-hmm. like what's the last word I said to my grandmother before she died? Well, that's not reasonable. And I'll choose to say, you know what, that message isn't for me to give to you. Maybe try somebody else. Mm-hmm. But I will know that. But if there is something that I don't get and I see nothing, mm-hmm. that's a sign of death, or say a near-death situation, that they will not be the same.
Do you always deliver that message to someone if that's what you're seeing? Or is that where you may say, maybe this isn't for me to forebode or for to tell you?
If someone asks me a question and I feel it, say, common question I'll get is, typically it's not about them, but say we have a mother that's sick. Mm-hmm. I can be asked, well, how much longer do they have?
Sure.
Common question. That I will know, I will not know specific in the sense of, say, October 27th. Mm-hmm. I will know a time frame of before the end of the year. Like, say, right now, I would say before the end of the year, because that's about a 6 month go. Mm-hmm. 0 to 6 months. I will know, I am the person that we can try to bypass. So if they have certain medical problems and say, I can see that they are lacking, say, vitamin B12, I will look at the person and say, you do your own research. I'm not a doctor. I can't I can't diagnose or medically describe,
sure.
But I see if we can up vitamin B12, we can bypass a hospital stay where they're, what I see that they might get sick from. Mm-hmm. Let's bypass this so we can keep them at bay. If I feel it is not the best interest to relay a message because it's going to cause more anxiety mm-hmm. than what they came with,
yeah.
I will tell them something does not feel right. I need you to heed that warning. I need you to keep an extra eye.
Mm-hmm.
I may know what the doom is, but I'm not going to relay it because that's not my job.
Sure.
To panic somebody.
Is that something, this is an interesting thing when we're talking about kind of timelines and, you know, manifest destiny, whatever you want to call it, where, you know, things are meant to be certain ways. When you are almost stepping in, if somebody comes to you or you're relaying a message to them that alters an outcome of what otherwise would have been had they not receive this warning from you, and there really would be no foreseeable way for them to get this warning any other way, whether it be coming from yourself or someone else with your abilities. But is that, in a way, is that altering timelines? Is that altering history? Is that what it's supposed to be? Are they supposed to be getting that message from you? Are they supposed to be avoiding that accident? Are they supposed to be avoiding whatever situation that you're essentially, like you said, you're kind of skipping over that. You're helping them do that. And it's for the good, ultimately, for their health. But at the same point, you know, it's kind of a morbid way to look at it. Was that supposed to happen? And it's all a matter of theory and opinion, but what's your thoughts on that?
I look at it going, fate comes in every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, too, everyone has a gift, and I'm not saying that as in everyone's a psychic medium. We have doctors that specialize in heart. They're the cardiologists. We have people that specialize in the lungs. We have a psychiatrist that specializes in the brain, et cetera. That everyone has a gift to offer to help people. So I always say people come to me for guidance and assistance. So there's a reason why I have the message.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always say, you can change fate and not do as I say. Either way, fate's going to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
I always look at it as we all have one path. We always choose the left path or the right path. Left path might be the easiest with limited bumps in the road, or we can have the right path where we always repeat the same mistakes and the problems, et cetera, but we get to the same alleyway. That's how I look at a message. You can take it and look into it and keep in the back of your mind, as in I don't give messages that'll give you more anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I told you to be careful of that red car, do you know how many people will be, oh my God, panic stricken at every red car?
Yeah.
That I always say, take it with warning, but I need you just to listen, but listen within. Because I'm going to tell you, 99% of the time, the person is also getting a message from the loved one on the other side, but they're not adhering it, which means the dreams that they might be seeing of that loved one, that they're like, Chelsea, I'm seeing them in my dream, but I don't know what they're saying, which is normal. Or they feel a certain way, or they've been feeling that they need to check up on their mother, but yet they are not even sick, you know? Mm-hmm. That I always say, it's a change in fate either way. Either you listen or you don't. And you're going to choose one path, which might be less bumps, or you're going to choose the one path that gives you all the speed bumps in the world.
It makes sense. I mean, it's one of those things where you can look at it in conjunction with the medical field to a certain extent, where someone could get cancer and the doctor identified it, they diagnosed it, they found it, and now they're going to, you know, get it out if possible. They could. It's almost the same sort of thing where you could make the same argument, or I could make the same argument. Like I was just trying to contemplate with you with, well, is it the doctor's job to say that, or just let them have the cancer and let it do whatever the hell it's going to do? No, you're stepping in and you're doing something to change what otherwise would have killed you. But because of the modern medicine that we have ways of alleviating these things and changing what nature would have otherwise done. The same can be said then of what you're doing too. And it doesn't have to be looked at as, you know, we're meddling with the future or anything like that.
Correct. It's crazy of how things work.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Chelsea Gill on Downloads from the Other Side. You can find out more about Chelsea's work at chelseagillbuffalo.com. com. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask Chelsea, how did her gift work in tandem with a criminal justice career? How did being surrounded by negative individuals in fraud investigation affect Chelsea? How often do you believe mental illness intersects with the paranormal or messages from beyond being given to a living person? We'll get her perspective. And what has been one of the most satisfying cases Chelsea has worked on in terms of helping find missing people or crime scenes? All of that in part two of our conversation. To hear it, become a supporter of our program. We call them Gravekeepers. You can do so by signing up on Patreon, patreon.com/thegravetalks. For $5 a month, you'll get access to every single interview we've ever done, hundreds of them waiting for you to binge away on part one and part two in their entirety. It's only $5 a month. You also get access to advanced episodes of the program weeks before we release them to the public, all commercial free. You can sign up for only $5 a month or get 1 month free when you sign up for an annual membership, patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.